Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I might have been asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
So I'm absolutely dreading the predictions part of this show, lads, because I've been doing a lot of thinking about this game and I cannot separate the two of them. Like, I mean, it's a 50-50 final. It's fantastic that we don't know who's going to win it, because let's be honest, Dublin have been kind of, you know, strong favourites in the recent part. Sixth ever final between Connacht and Ulster. Last one was 2012 involving Mayo and Donegal. Didn't work out too well against Mayo. I don't know. I think, like, I mean, Mayo fans often go back to that 2012 final, Aaron, and it's kind of like the one that got away. They beat the Dubs. They've beat the Dubs this year in the semi-final. Now they have a final that's winnable. Like, you can say, look, we lost to Dublin and they're brilliant and it's acceptable. The 2012 one is one that really pisses them off. And if they don't win this one, like, this brilliant support that they have, Aaron, like, I mean, I don't know, like, will they just give up on Mayo for Sam at this stage?
Yeah, like, I suppose if you just look a wee bit down the tracks hard, even if it doesn't go for them, you would have to say, when are they ever going to win one? I don't believe in the curse or anything.
Yeah, that's
nonsense for me, but they have an absolute massive opportunity. You say 2012 was very similar, and to be fair to McGuinness, he picked out a few weaknesses, worked on a few things, which got them to two goals early on and left them clambering for the whole game. I would expect that you could see another curveball, you could see something thrown at them again this weekend from Tyrone. But in terms of both teams going into it and the whole week and everyone you're chatting to, like, no two people are going to agree with you know, and it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant to have. You say a 50-50 All-Ireland final where you're going to be guaranteed absolute manic intensity throughout. We'll be kept in the edge of our seats. I don't see it being a massively high-scoring game. I think the intensity and aggression levels will be huge. But from a Mayo perspective, it's one that they just simply have to get across the line. Like, there's only so many times, you know, you can take setbacks. I lost one All-Ireland myself, I'm sure you did, and it always sticks in you. Can Lee Keegan lose a six? Like, is that humanly possible, you know, to do that to yeah. one person? Like,
I wonder, does it get easier?
I don't think it would. I think it'd be cruel. It's absolutely, I think it has to get worse. It has to get worse, because you're always striving and chasing for this one massive hay. So We'll see. It's definitely, it's going to be an intriguing day out.
Going back to that 2012 match, Brendan, like, I mean, the two early Donegal goals, like, I mean, what, I don't know what it is about Mayo in finals, but they're always chasing the game after conceding goals. Like, Colm Keyes in The Independent had some stats on this, and in the eight All-Ireland finals that they've played in this century, the last 20 years, eight of them, and a lot of them came in the last 10 years, they've conceded 15 goals. 80% of them, which is 12, have come in the first half. If you drill down even deeper, 8 of those 12 have come in the first 16 minutes. Isn't it always that seems to be the case? I remember the two OGs against Dublin and they fly in at Dublin playing terribly. They gave Dublin two goals. They always seem to be chasing and they heroically get back into contention, but they waste so much energy trying to do that, you know, eventually they lose.
Yeah. I don't understand that when they got away 2012, for me, it was only one winner in that game. Well, particularly because Donegal beating the likes of Kerry, Cork, Tyrone, playing that real, real rigid. They were the last team Mayo needed to play in terms of how they play. And when the goals went down the inning, Donegal stopped playing. There, I'd say fair play to Mayo, they had a go after. It was too easy for Donegal in the first half. I think that's what led to that. Listen, I had no doubt Donegal were going to win that match. And you talk about semi-finals, the one as well, obviously McDonald's in the background, you know, they overcame a Dublin deficit as well, went into the final. I just think with this one, and Aaron, I think because we've never seen a team like Dublin in terms of winning, we've never seen a team like Mayo in terms of losing. Now, I know what you're saying about the finals and the scars and that, but it's got the stage now where Mayo, there's so many now, I don't think it matters. I don't even think it matters to lose this one. They'll go into next year the exact same again. It just seems to be the way they are now. And they just keep going and going. And because Mayo people are stone mad, the fans are stone mad, they just keep embracing it. And it's not like other counties probably where you lose games and some players get attacked. And I know we'll obviously talk about Aidan O'Shea and we've talked about him before in terms of he kind of was maybe the Mayo player people went to. But by and large, the players are backed all the time, every year. And it just keeps going. And I think the big difference with this one is, you know, if you look at it, the Tyrone's last final, you know, there's nobody now, there's no connection, of course, to 2008, so nobody on this pitch is going to have an All-Ireland medal. So it's such a fascinating encounter, and I think Tyrone going in that final with Dublin a couple of years ago, they would have been down prepared to win. Did they completely believe that they could win? I don't think they did. And I think Mayo going in the most of their finals, they came in to win the game, but I don't think in their heart of hearts, right to the very last, that they believe they could beat this Dublin team or beat Kerry teams, for example, the lads was involved. There just seemed to be that difference. But I think both these camps, and I think that's why this is set up for an absolute cracker, they both totally believe they can win this match. That's why we're so infused about this game.
I think we are. I'm sure James Horan will be well aware of what happened in 2012. You know, even like in other games where we're looking at those stats, it's vital that they don't concede, you know, a goal and be chasing another All-Ireland final. Like, Horan has managed 3 All-Ireland finals. You know, the Tyrone management haven't. There's a slight advantage there. Now, I know last year's was behind closed doors, but when it comes to management, I know Doer has won 3 All-Irelands and all those kind of things. They've won under 21. But planning an All-Ireland final, you know, the logistics of it, you know, do we get there on time? You know, Horan has done that. Horan has learned from mistakes in All-Ireland finals. There has to be a slight advantage to that, Aaron.
There is, for sure. Like, you go back to his first one in 2012, and I suppose maybe the biggest one was he got his matchups wrong early on, and that there where he had Kevin Keane and Murphy. Yeah. The damage was done and the game was gone. You could say maybe even as far as this year, like, was his matchups right even in the first half against Galway whenever they were so poor? You can say yes, he turned it around, he made his changes at halftime and they worked. But can you afford to wait to halftime this weekend? You know, if you look at the history of the amount of goals they conceded and how early they're conceding them, you know, they can't do it against Tyrone because they can sit back, they can soak up all the pressure, they can get their turnovers and kill them on the break after that there. But I did think that there was a noticeable change in how they defended. I think they coughed up points, you know, just from looking back over the Dublin Mayo game this year, I looked back over this week, just to see it again, to have it fresh in my own mind. And there were times where you would have generally seen a Mayo player push out an attack and put pressure on a block or trying to dispossess a Dublin player, and they just drop off and give away a point. Do you know, where I think the big thing with them was they just weren't going to give away a goals. Now, the tally nearly ran up. They might as well have given away a few goals. But ultimately, it still kept them alive in the game. Where goals, I know it's 3 points, but psychologically, it's a killer. Yeah. But I think that was the big difference that I noticed from them, from how they would have been this past 10 years, where they chased down even lost causes at times to their, I suppose, detriment. So that's a massive one. If they can get the half-time without conceding a goal this weekend, it's a huge change in comparison to every All-Ireland final that we've seen from them this past, the UCL going right back to 96.
Yeah, no, it definitely has. So, like, I mean, at the semi-final, there was a supporter behind me in the press box. I was in the cheap seats of the press box at the very back. So there was, the next row behind me was supporters. And there was a supporter going absolutely mad for Kerry, an older man. Just shouting every ball and come on, Kerry, whatever. And then at the end of normal time, I turned around and talked to him and chatting away about Kerry and whatever. And then the full time went anyways, and Trum were after winning. I says, hard luck to him or whatever. And he turns around to me, says, I'm not from Kerry, I'm from Mayo. I didn't want to play Tyrone. So he was shouting for Kerry. And I don't know why, it made kind of confused me as to why Mayo fans would have wanted Kerry over Tyrone. They beat Tyrone in 2013. They beat them back in 2004 when they were all defending All-Ireland champions. They beat them in 2016. They've beaten them in some very close league games, even in Oma, I remember. They've lost one or two to them as well. I don't know why. I would have thought Mayo psychologically had more over Tyrone than Mayo, or Tyrone than Kerry, Brennan.
Yeah, did you not have your phone recorder with you and ask that guy to explain himself? Have you got some kind of tactical outlook? Maybe it'd be a good part of the show there, Willie, a wee live interview. But listen, I suppose everybody's got their views on it. If I was a male person, as you said, the track record seems to be certain teams just like playing each other. You know, yeah. Like Gary and them used to love playing us because they won every time, and that was unfortunate for us. But certain teams just seem to have something over each other. And for me, if anything, Mayo have the advantage in that recent record. And maybe it's just a structured way, the way that Tyrone will sit and grind it out. If you look at how this game will transpire, and you're 100% right about goals in the first half and the psychological aspect there, and I totally agree, it'll feel a lot worse, particularly if someone hits a goal and tags on a point. You know, to hit 4 points in a row is difficult in the game, but if somebody kind of grabs somebody by the neck and extends that gap, and I think what Mayo will be afraid of, maybe more so than the Dogs with Tyrone, is how Tyrone will manage a lead and how they'll sit and get more and more, I suppose what you call, into their defensive shape and hit you in the counter-attack. That's the big fear, I think, for Mayo going in this, and that's what I suppose people are afraid of. And if you look at this game going down the wire, for me it either has a couple of outcomes. Obviously, for me it's going to go down the wire, but I think if Tyrone go on to any kind of lead, and we've seen it even with Kerry the last day, it just is a thing. It's in most of the Ulster teams and in a lot of teams. They'll automatically start to drop and look to hit you on the break. Whereas if Kerry get a couple of points up and Tyrone, let's say 10 to go, 15 to go, they'll just keep going. So I think in all Mayo's heart of hearts, the dream for them would be an end-to-end game and Mayo to hit Tyrone for a couple, be ahead going into that last stretch and just to open up and just keep going at them, because that's what they'll do. At the other end, there's the fear that if Tyrone get into that bit of a lead on them, force Mayo into awkward positions and awkward shots. That's the Tyrone mantra, and that's the thing that Mayo were afraid of in those tight situations. They want the game, I think, to be extended all the time and be in the end, and Tyrone want the opposite. And how that game filters down, I think after the first half, it's all about the second half and how that game ends up and then how people bring on their bench and use it.
Yeah, we'll talk about all that stuff definitely in part two. Another one I thought was interesting is, we know Tyrone like a siege mentality, so they had the perfect siege mentality going into the Kerry match. They were wrote off. I wrote them off. Everybody wrote them off. I think the young Kerry lad went over to meet Ronaldinho and the talk was that he was going to invite Ronaldinho to the final. Like, I mean, Brian McGuigan tweeted after the semi-final, is Ronaldinho not coming to the final now? Is that? But so it was the perfect siege mentality for them. You're being written off, and Tyrone loved that kind of stuff. They're not being written off in this. It's a 50-50 game. Where's that edge going to come from? Do they need that edge? They seem to like those kind of edges. I saw Niall Sludden talking about Mayo celebrating after the 2016 game. This was Tyrone were Ulster champions. Mayo had been beaten in Connacht and came through the qualifiers. Tyrone were strong favourites for that. It was Sludden's first year. But he says, I remember that game being a really physical game and Mayo just having our number that day. I do remember chances at the end and we didn't take them. I don't think there was much in it, but I do remember at the end Mayo really celebrating hard, and it hurt. It hurt a lot. It hurt the team too as well. Don't tell me they're going to use that. Are they going to use 2016 celebrations, that feeling on the pitch? Or, like, can they go to that well all the time, Aaron?
I laughed whenever I seen that there, because it was all I thought that they could possibly come up with. That was 5 years ago. Different management teams, huge personnel change. Massive, from Mayo, yeah. And Tyrone, for that matter. So for me, like, there's only so many times you can keep trying to create a narrative where it's the poor me. But in fairness to them,
they will try.
There's no team that likes a chip on the shoulder like them, and they respond very well to it. But I can't see them using it. You couldn't attempt to keep beating that drum that this is why, because they celebrate it. Sure, every team that beats you in a big game where it goes down to the wire, of course they're going to celebrate. It surprised me that he said it, because he obviously was thinking it. But how much it was used in the Tyrone camp over this past fortnight, I'd be very surprised if it was a common theme that was popping up. But they'll find something. I don't know whether I don't even think it's an Ulster thing, Brendan. I think it's maybe just a Northern thing where we like to have a chip on our shoulder.
You look at it, Aaron. The North's always different, right? It's different everywhere. Look at Game of Thrones. It's all about the North. They're all nuts up the North. I think you're right. There is this thing, obviously, but what's going on, particularly in the Occupied Six, what's happened, right? There's a siege going on. There always was a siege. And I think that there's a hardness to obviously the Ulster football that we know. And I think when you come down and how maybe the Ulster teams and maybe got about teams a wee bit, there's this kind of narrative about Ulster teams and about needing a siege. And I don't necessarily think that. I think there's probably more of a team togetherness. And if you look at how some of the teams used to play, you know, there was always maybe a flair element to teams. Now, I know Tyrone had many players in that as well, and yourself, Stevie, but by and large, there was more, again, maybe more rigid attacking nature, getting in people's faces and that. And I think all that leads on the people saying they need a siege and that. I wouldn't buy into that too much.
You agree with that, Aaron? Like, I mean, is it that there's a siege in the six counties and this is where this is how you react?
To be fair, like, we get wound up over stuff, like, you know, that might be in the media, you know.
Will the Sunday game never give you any credit?
No, but they do, like, it does get to, we do see it then very much as a us and them, you know, the North versus the rest. Definitely gets into the psyche, and you'll hear people locally, whether it was never Armagh was going well or maybe it was Cross or whatever, and you'll see Tyrone using it as well. But there is, we look, something that might seem very simple or an off the cuff statement can be taken very very differently with ourselves.
You have to be careful. Both management teams are complaining about the same thing. They're in unison on this one. James Horan has been given out about the Mir Fuerna being banned, and you obviously have a water break, Brendan, but like, there's 40,000 in Croke Park. It'll be the noisiest. You know, we all remember playing in Croke Park, and I'm playing left half forward or left half back, and the centre back shouting at you, and you can only see his lips moving. There's no, you can't even hear what he's saying. So, like, Brian Doerr has been complaining about it. He said, "Thank God for the water break, because the Mir Fuerna role needs to come back. You cannot get messages out to your players." So, like, I think the majority of people want the water break to go, Brendan, because, like, well, I think from reading around, they do. But that Mir Fuerna has to come back. Like, a manager can't just stand there on the sideline without having any hope in a packed stadium of getting any message in, can he?
Yeah, listen, I agree, surely. Well, I suppose there's a few things on that. The water break had such a massive impact. We heard it so much, not so much in the last couple of games, really, when it was like a definitive restructure and a reorganising. But there had been throughout the season there, through the league and the early part of the championships, huge differences from water break, breaking momentum, and teams getting new tactics on you, right? But I think back, I mean, trouble enough only telling you what to do before a game, never mind somebody coming on to tell you during. I don't think you'd listen. I don't really remember. I think it's more a management thing, because they're wound up in the sideline, they're trying to get messages on. I don't remember any messages coming on to me in the pitch. Maybe he passed the freaking ball a bit more often or something like that. But I don't remember really anything huge coming on the pitch.
Yeah, it's more, I'd say it's more positional now. Switches, yeah. Would it be?
Well, tactically as well, just the way the game has developed and evolved in terms of maybe if something's not working, if you're looking to get a change, so instead of letting it run till halftime or till the water break or whatever, just in terms of your setup, are we going on a high press on kickouts, or to try and get that relayed across six forwards or maybe two midfielders and six forwards, it is difficult to get everyone on the one page. I don't like the water breaks, and that's as a player now. I'm getting sick of walking over, because you're only out playing, and next thing 15 minutes later you're back over and it's another conversation. Then you have half time coming again. I just think it just breaks up the play. I'd rather just let it go.
Yeah.
The Mayor Fáinne, it's probably more now to get tactical messages out to players, but to be fair, it was abused by certain selectors or coaches. So some managers...
They were zonally marking kickers,
weren't they? Yeah, so some managers, they'll have no one to blame but themselves for it, you know, because they pushed the boundaries of what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be out, get a message and off. So I can understand
Would you not think that, you know, really, if you don't have a tactic, surely, you know, maybe 4 weeks they plan for Tyrone, they're going to say, right, this is a situation, this situation, this situation. Outside of maybe switching a player... You know, what surely they can get from a half back that's closer to them. They say, tell them on the switch, or, you know, whoever it is closer to them. It's surely not that difficult. The whole thing of tactics going on the pitch, I just think surely that this buy-in there has been addressed outside of something really weird happening or telling the player to mark somebody else.
No, I agree. I think the message to switch positions or switch markers is very easy. It's one-to-one. But I do take your point, Aaron, where you go, look, we're putting a big press the last 10 minutes now or something. There's a weakness there. If you tell one player that, how can he get across to it? You know, it's a lot of players need to kind of hear that message. You know,
because you're shouting it to other players. Your opponent hears it. They can read what's happening now. They've planned for what you're maybe going to tweak or what else you're going to throw at them. So it's something that needs to be filtered around in a good fashion that everyone is on board. But I do agree to a certain extent that you have to let so much go that's just off the cuff. I'm not in management, so I don't know how difficult, how often I really need to talk. But for me, I think everything is talked about and communicated. I don't know how massively, massively important it really is. I don't know whether it's as bad as they're making it out to be.
Yeah.
You know, for 100 years, we managed without a Mayor Fáinne.
Yeah.
And we get on okay. But like you said, they do seem to be making a big case for it at the moment.
Maybe they see their roles as being more important than they actually are, which might be a little bit understandable as well. Yeah, we don't know, but it's a tough job for a Mayor Fáinne to get in and talk to six or seven players. They're sprinting around trying to get to everyone. Alan Dillon has been talking about the Mayo crowd, Brendan, and we know, I've been at enough All-Ireland finals, semi-finals involving Mayo to know that you talk about Mayo team bringing in intensity. The Mayo crowd bringing in intensity like no other. And I mean, if they're outnumbered by Dublin fans, you still hear them more. They drive their team on. There's a chaos that happens in all Mayo games, and it's down to the crowd. And Mayo players on the field seem to be calm amongst all the chaos, and only Dublin really could match them when the game gets to these completely disorganised. It's chaos. There's turnovers happening all over the bloody field. You can't even think. I don't know how the players have the calmness to be able to think on the field. But he said, when momentum is with you, it's great to have them on your side. Mayo are probably the best in the country when that tempo and that level. But I suppose there's an uneasiness around mistakes and the oohs and the ahs from the crowd. And that's kind of a big thing. When the game's disorganised, there's a turnover. The Mayo support kick every single ball. Now, for me, when it gets that disorganised, I see that as a big advantage to Mayo. I don't think there's an uneasiness on the Mayo side. I think the other team's not used to this complete chaos.
Yeah. I'd probably want to listen to this call. You know, I've heard loads of times people giving off with Mayo fans, right? And I've heard it a couple of times then about Kerry and that. And you know what, I relate this back to, and you're on about celebrating earlier. Most teams lose to these teams. I think with the Dublin could be cool because they were in control and they were so good. They probably didn't want to ram it down anybody's throat anymore because, yeah, we're going to win and that's it. So I see that as that thing of people maybe... You lose a championship game and there's a bit of mouth in between people, and then they hold on to it. People hold on to that stuff while deep. And it could be one bad egg in among 200 that's you have to fall out, and then your Mayo fans or whoever you're playing against. But you're right, that same thing, and that's what you talked about earlier, Aaron, about, you know, scars and Mayo and that. I just think because the fans are that way, they just the complete backing of them is unreal. And in terms of in the game there, Willie, I think the Mayo fans or the Mayo players now are well used to that. And this year of all years, I think when nobody's expecting anything and the way the championship's gone, I think this is the time that I think they're going to light up. And as I said, particularly in that second half, if Mayo get a run on them and then fans get behind them, it's a bit like the old scenario with the Hull there, with teams used to do to Dublin. It's a bit of that there. But I think by and large, when Mayo were 10-4 down to Dublin, as soon as they kick that next score, you know, the Mayo fans are up. They don't need a couple of scores to raise them.
Yeah.
They're behind them every time. So it gives you great confidence going into the game that you're not under pressure from your own fans. I know they're really involved in it, but they're behind you, and that's all you want as a player.
It's definitely something Tyrone need to talk about, Aaron, right? That in the second half, you know, more so, the game will be chaotic. Mayo might get two in a row. Now their fans will cheer every pass, every score, every turnover, and it'll be fever pitch. And lads, you have to be ready for that.
Yeah, and again, just looking back over the Dublin Mayo semi final, like from an 8-year-old man to the children who were there, they were going berserk. As soon as this comeback was on, you could see them, they're literally jumping up and down, looking at each other as much as to say, we're on our way back here. They all get involved in it. And I suppose it just goes back. I remember walking into Croke Park in the 2017 All-Ireland final, and Sun was splitting the stones and the green and red of Mayo come on. And I suppose Tony McEntee was coaching them at that time, but I've no invested interest in Mayo football. The hair was standing on the back of my neck. The atmosphere at that stage, like the place went mental. Do you know, there's probably very few counties that really, really engross themselves in a game. You say literally kick every ball, and it has to fuel you. But the big thing that you say is, well, Brandon, you'd mentioned, like, they're well used to it. You would have had the fear maybe with some teams, once that sort of swell of emotion comes from the support, the players, then the adrenaline just goes through the roof, and you know, you make the big catch or a block or something out there and you hair off doing something you shouldn't do. They can still stay in the moment, you know, and continue to do the simple things well. But I would say it is a case of, this is building for whatever, since Horan came in, since 2010, 10, 11 years of it. So it's something that the whole group has become used to and accustomed to. And I definitely think it helps them. But I don't think there's a hindrance. I don't think they get caught up in it as players, which is, it's great from them perspective, because I suppose we're all passionate and we all can lose the run of ourselves, but they seem to be able to just keep a lid on it.
I think that it affects them. Even Alan says there's an uneasiness. I think it affects the opposition because they're not used to it. Like, I mean, I remember 2007 final against Dublin, and we talk about don't concede a goal to Dublin, the stadium comes alive. And that stayed, like, we were a few points up before half time, they scored a goal, Mark Vaughan. That stadium, it was 82,000 at it that day. That stadium just rocked. And I was playing wing forward. I remember thinking, Jesus Christ. Do you know, like, I mean, just the noise of it, like, your brain scrambles for a second and goes, and then by the time the whole thing had died down, Dublin got another goal. And by half time, then we were shell shocked. We were four down instead of being three or four up. But with Mayo, Brendan, this kind of stadium rocking, this can happen with a turnover. Like, the stadium could go my, and it doesn't die down then. It stays going at that fever pitch. And, like, you could get 10 minutes of the... Like, you need to be incredibly mentally strong, I presume, to stick to your game, you know, as the whole stadium's just lost the plot.
Yeah. And that's my game coming out of the lockdown and big crowds and, I suppose, atmospheres. You know, it's all right saying through one that won't bother them. I think, obviously, it has to have effect on you, because we've seen performances and teams change as soon as fans come back in. Home teams and that, you've seen a lift from them. I've seen it, been at games myself. You see that presence of fans lifting the team, and it's always what we've known. But you're right, that I suppose, for years, well, I've hated the kind of bit of the tough the rhetoric on Mayo, because, you know, looking back at it, well, you know, like, most players give the right arm to play in the Ireland final, and they dream about it, they talk about it, if they even got near it or played in it, for example. So, but these guys here, they're living out the dreams of many footballers, yet they're taking all this abuse and sticking it. So they just, I think that's what I'm saying, they've got used to it. That's why I don't think there's any issue with them going into this final. You know, they've got the 4-week lead-in now. The Horan is meticulous. And I think in that preparation, and particularly in COVID now, you don't see anybody anymore. You don't see players. You're not going to see players, because you don't really see anybody generally. And no, things is opening up. But you don't see people still where you are. Like, I was talking to one lad who knows one of the wee Mayo forwards well. I'm not mentioning him, but he knows him well enough to text him. He texted him a couple of weeks ago, and then he made us the hand. He says, "No, phone's been off since the semi-final. Basically, you know, he's just down. That's it." So everybody's completely tuned in for this. And I think coming into that Calder and Croke Park now, I think, yeah, certainly the fans, I think, will give certainly that extra wee lift in Mayo. Listen, not right now, but the noise that Tyrone are going to bring as well, will they? So
yeah.
I think that's an important aspect of the game.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to run down the Tyrone support, which are pretty loud as well. It's just Mayo's take it to whole new levels. Last one before we start talking about the match, as Dara O'Shea was in the Irish Times talking about sleeping before the 1997 final. He didn't sleep at all the night before the 1997. I don't think I'd tug out. I'd be like, Jesus, my head would be completely gone. He said, "I didn't sleep a wink on the Saturday night. Of one of those nights where you know you have to sleep, so all you can think about is trying to sleep, and then you can't sleep, and then you pass from trying to sleep to worrying about not sleeping is going to mean for you the next day, and now you definitely can't sleep at all." I don't know, like, I didn't really have problems other than maybe rolling around for maybe half an hour. I kind of nodded off then, Aaron. I can't imagine staying up all night before an All-Ireland final.
Yeah, that's a disaster. To be fair, I wouldn't be the greatest of sleepers. I'd be excited to know you'd be looking forward to your big games, be twisting and turning. It definitely wouldn't get a peaceful, clear night sleeping through. But yeah, to be that excited or that pumped that you don't get any sleep, like, it's a disaster, because
he's in a hotel room as well that he doesn't know as well, which isn't ideal.
And probably a bit of baggage and pressure coming from 11 years of not having Sam and the uncle being manager. He had plenty riding on him at that stage. But yeah, it's far from ideal. But I think, I suppose, every team now, they're used to travelling. You're used to staying away in different hotels. I'm fairly sure that, you know, Tyrone will be just going through the same routine that they did for the semi-final. Mayo at this stage are well accustomed to it. So I think it's something that most teams will have fairly well adapted to. But it's a massive game. It's as big an occasion as you're ever going to get. It's where you want to be. So there's pressures and there's excitement and there's a whole lot that comes with that there.
Yeah, I kind of relate the sleep thing, Brendan, more to when the children are crying in the middle of the night and you go in and give them the bottle and you're in there too long, now you're wide awake, it's 4 a.m, you know your alarm's going off at 7, you're getting more annoyed and annoyed and you're never sleeping. You might as well just go down and make yourself a cup of tea.
Yeah. I see Colin Gavin writing about this in the Star too. He just loved his own bed and he must have a wee comfy blanket or something in there that he didn't want to get away from. But yeah, listen, the sleep thing, I remember years ago, what do you call it, Craig used to sponsor Westmeath. I remember we did go down to play Offaly. Me and Tony Boyle was together. It was my first year. And we were in that hotel. There was a nightclub in it. And the tunes was kicking out of the nightclub. And I was big into my house at the time. I was naming the tunes to Tony Boyle. And this was going on and on. I was like, geez, who planned this sad trip? So hopefully the guys don't have anything for that to put up with, you know.
No, I said it'd be quiet enough. Right, we'll leave it there and we'll start talking about the match finally. All right, so we have loads to get through here, lads. There's loads of different points that we need to talk about. I suppose we'll start off, Aaron, with the way they'll set up, and they're going to set up pretty similar. Like, I mean, generally in the semi-final, I've been at both semi-finals, Tyrone are leaving the three inside. They're leaving McCurry, Donnelly and McKenna inside. No huge major formation. Maybe McKenna out in front of the two boys a little bit. And then you have Aidan O'Shea and Ryan O'Donoghue and Tommy Conroy kind of maybe starting in the half forward line, maybe a little bit in front of them. He doesn't want to work back. So very similar. Half forward lines are going to work like dogs into that middle third. That's the battle zone. Tyrone keep talking about the intensity Mayo are going to bring. We know Tyrone bring an intensity. So there's a lot of similarities between how the team, both teams are going to put a lot of pressure on. That's the big change from Tyrone this year, in that they're pressuring further out the field, like Mayo. So there's a lot of similarities between the two teams.
I think that's what makes it just so intriguing. You have two clashes, you know, that are two similar styles that are going to clash here. The suppose between the 245s is where a lot of the contact is going to happen. In terms of long, direct, early ball in, something that we might have seen, Tyrone doing against Monaghan. Not sure you'll see a huge pile of that, because the heat that's going to be on them, it's going to be difficult to get those passes off inside. But I suppose in the whole context of it, you know what you're getting from both teams. You know, Tyrone really stifled Kerry, had a few key matchups, the bulk of the matchups, and they won them all. The difference in this game is, I think that Mayo have a lot more running power, and in terms of running power, I mean numbers going that Kerry didn't have. Kerry isolated themselves a huge amount. It was one-off runners all the time, which is just exactly what Tyrone wanted. Where I think what we've seen from Mayo this past few years since Horan has developed this sort of new team is the willingness of 3-4 boys to go every time. The risk for them, or not the risk for them, is the question mark is, it didn't happen in the first half against Dublin, and it didn't happen in the first half against Galway. Is there a reason for that? You know, in terms of tactically, I don't think there is. I think it just didn't happen. You know, I think the drive wasn't in them, and I think it has to happen from the first minute this weekend, because there's nothing more than Tyrone love than getting turnovers, because number one, they'll punish you on them, but secondly, it lifts them. They get in your face, they'll aggravate Mayo, they'll put them off their game. So from the first minute, if they're going with a running game, they need to get it going. They can't afford to wait the half time, because psychologically, even if it's not on the scoreboard, psychologically it'll give Tyrone a huge lift.
Well, that's the thing, when we talk about Mayo, Brendan, like, I mean, Gavin White, when he got it, the odd kick out, he was able to make inroads, and there was nobody really with him. He'd give it to a forward, he'd take too much out of it. Mayo have maybe four Gavin Whites. They've Oisin Mullen, they've Paddy Durkin, they've Lee Keegan. They're, you know, three really big ones. They've Hessian if he starts, and he could easily start, that are able to punch holes. And on the Tyrone side, we know McGeary, we know, you know, who'll play wing for, you might have Myler. These lads will be tracking these lads might be spending their time tracking these runs, and they're maybe not able to drop back and double up, and, you know, and help out maybe like they were against Kerry.
Yeah, I did a couple of critical things in there. Well, where does O'Shea play? Like, if he goes inside, obviously, the way Mike and me picked up Clifford, you know, is he coming in and out, and how does that disrupt the flow of the forward line? And will Mayo target long ball then? At the other end of the pitch, is Mullen fit enough to play? Is Owen McLaughlin about, in terms of, as you said, players with legs to break forward? And I think from Mayo's perspective, it's about getting scores. So if you leave it that O'Hara's in around the house with Mullen, right, then that would probably leave Keegan picking up McKenna, which is a strange one in terms of the danger of McKenna versus Keegan going forward. And for me, I would want Keegan up the pitch as much as possible, because he can put the ball over the bar. At the end of the day, with obviously, as we know, O'Connor out and scores, you know, we've seen not a huge score, low scoring game against Dublin, which is probably the reason, let's be honest, Mayo got the draw and then came through. So I think it's utilising any player that's able to put the ball over the bar from Mayo. I think there's more danger on the Tyrone side, and particularly after the three goals in the semi. I think that's kind of the setup of both teams. But for me, any of those players, you mentioned Durkin, O'Connor, players that can get in, can break that line and either set up a score, get a free, or put the ball over the bar, they have to be given a licence. And if they're doing detailed man-to-man jobs, it's going to negate what Mayo have. And I think that's a huge aspect of the game, getting that right from Mayo's perspective.
Yeah, you see, I don't think any of the Mayo half-back line would be given details. I think the Tyrone half-forward line might actually be detailed. There, Oisin Mullen will bump forward, Paddy Durkin will bump forward. They'll have to be watched. Is that McGeary? Is it Myler? Does Myler mark Ruan? We'll get to matchups in a minute, because Myler marked Fenton before in All-Ireland Finals. But, like, I mean, when you look at the Mayo full back line, I think Keegan plays in there. I think Keegan plays on Donnelly or McShane or whoever's in there. I think O'Hara marks McCurry. I think Hessian might start on McKenna. They'd be my matchups. We talked about James Horan. We might as well do matchups here. We talked about James Horan getting them wrong before. If he listens to the show, there's your matchups, James.
Yeah, I suppose just to go back to it, and I do think it's going to be key, and it might seem extreme, but I think the Mayo defence and midfielders are going to need to kick 6 to 8 points this weekend for them to win, because their forwards are going to be under that much pressure. They're going to be outnumbered in terms of the amount of people that Tyrone will back, and the hate that will be on them. I think it's their running game from Durkin, Keegan, McLaughlin, if he plays, Oisin Mullen, Matthew Ryan in particular. Those guys have to get scores on the board, because they're punching holes. The more holes they punch, the more they're able to draw out the thrown defence, which then frees up the forward line to kick scores, because like you would say, the out and out scoring potential and so forward quality, you would have to say it's lopsided, slightly favouring Tyrone. But the running game and the strongest point of Mayo will be their defence, how sound they are defensively, but the running power they have from it, and their midfield, and obviously their fetching ability in midfield.
Yeah, like, I mean, both teams have great running games. I do think Mayo have more pace coming out of the defence than Tyrone, and do that better. Like, I mean, I think Tyrone have an advantage in the full forward line, but their kicking game was a disaster against Kerry. So can they get that advantage? If both teams break even around that middle third battle zone, who can get more out of their full forward? I think Tyrone's is more dangerous, Brendan. We'll get to Aidan O'Shea in a minute. Here's the thing. Does McShane start? Let's just discuss that for a second. For me, he starts. I think they have to stop this. He's all-star full forward. Not only does he start, he puts Donnelly into midfield, which gives them much better balance. Kennedy probably isn't as mobile enough to be running around after Dermot O'Connor, Ruan, Loftus, these lads. Matty Donnelly needs to be out there. So even if you don't want to start McShane, you almost have to, because you want to bring Donnelly out there into that area. Then you have McKenna, McShane and McCurry. Now that's an All-Ireland win and full forward line.
Mm. Obviously, McShane is really. I think McShane was at his. That player won the All-Star. Of course, he starts. He's a main man inside, you know. I know McCurry's been brilliant, but, you know, in terms of everything, that McShane, he's like the complete footballer inside. But certainly, lastly, if you look at it with himself and Canavan, McCann, even Bradley coming on, you know, you're on with Hessian there. Like, Mayo do need to keep something in reserve, because Tyrone are going to reserve. And if they start McShane, someone else is going to come on with a point to prove. So that's a difficult one. Well, I've watched them every game. I've been at all of them up into the semi-final in the flesh, and just watching McShane himself, very rusty looking against Cavan in the first game when he came on. And then, you know, I've just seen him slowly get better and better. I still don't think he's where Callum McShane can be. But you're right, there's an interesting one. If they do that, let's just say they let McCurry in. We're just talking about McCurry the last day. Really showing his maturity in the game, where he's been well marked, and then he came on the loop. Maybe that's the game for him in a pack Mayo defence, where they're clipping and clapping and really trying to clamp players again. If you have a target line inside, if McKenna stays inside with McShane, and you're going back to the ghost of 2012, etc., really, Tyrone could go direct with that ball inside. Of two large ball winners in there, and if McCurry stays close to him, that's a very dangerous proposition in terms of the flick down. And you have a player with real guile and skill coming off the back of that, along with all the rest of the runners. So it's a huge decision. Has McShane got 70 in him now? Well, because he hasn't played 70 in so long, 70 plus. You know, does he go off then at the vital point of the game? As we all know, Willie, we've seen some terrible first half from teams this season that went on to win the game. So I think everyone's looking at the second half. So that might be the wee tilting factor, that they just hold McShane in terms of bringing him on for where the winning of the match is, because he has done that, his contribution the last day. Again, of course, the goal was massive.
Yeah, I suppose I don't know. I prefer the good players to start. Like, I mean, there's a point. We talked about Mayo being surprised by Donegal with that long direct ball to Michael Murphy. Like, could we see that? I remember the last league game Mayo played against Tyrone. It was in Castlebar. Tyrone relegated them. It was a brilliant game. Tyrone scored 3 goals. Like, they were playing with the wind in the first half, and Conor McKenna was dropping deep, pumping in long ball. Remember, Dara Canavan skinned the Mayo full back line. Like, could Tyrone be in their team meetings, go, here, hang on a second, everyone's expecting us. We got loads of scores off turnovers the last day. We know Mayo are going to track us like dogs. You know, Kerry didn't do it. We won't get that joy off Mayo. Well, let's throw something at them that they're not expecting.
Well, the one thing about it is Mayo will give you that opportunity.
Because you don't play a full-time sweeper.
If you want to take it, they'll give you that opportunity. Now, with the Tyrone line-up the last day, depending on where they are, like you have Myler, Hart, McGeary, O'Neill playing in around the half-forward lane. Who's a half-forward? Who's a half-back?
Yeah.
Very hard to tell. So it does give Mayo, you wouldn't even call him a sweeper, it just gives them a free defender to play his own position. Is that something that they're going to talk about? This is what we do if they do start going long. Like, there's one man in at the foot of a full back to pick up the pieces of a break ball. But definitely the opportunity will be there for Tyrone if they wanted to chance a few. They have the personnel who can pass, and they have the ball winners, and like Brendan rightly said, the likes of McCurry sniping round in there, who would finish a half chance if it came his way. Something simple like that there might be the difference. It's the curveball that's thrown at this here that, you know, did just take a risk or take a chance, because I don't think it's going to work on the opposite. Like, even though O'Shea is a bigger man, Tyrone are excellent. You go right back to the teams that I played against, where we had Steve McDonald, Ronan Clark. They found it so hard to either win their own ball or to bring each other into the game, because Tyrone were excellent at having an extra man at the foot of their defenders in the full back line. They read deflated the ball well. They always got themselves into a position where they were able to help someone in a one-on-one situation. So for me, they're more streetwise. Tyrone is more streetwise with that regard than what Mayo would be. So is that something that Dewar and Logan are looking at? Could well be a possibility.
Certainly when Mayo don't have a very obvious natural full back in there, unless they play Brendan Harrison, he came on the last day, you know, so he's back and he's had that month. He's obviously an all-star player who would be a natural full back, be able to play there, no problem. What about Aidan O'Shea, Brendan? I take Aaron's point. Ronan McNamee's going to want Aidan O'Shea to play in there, because if Aidan O'Shea doesn't play in there, he's going to have to pick up either Ryan O'Donoghue or Tommy Conrine. He doesn't want that day at the office, really, probably at all. He'd love nothing more than to stick it into Aidan O'Shea, win a ball off him, tell him he's no good, tell him he's cramping like the semi-final, say, you know, look, it's happening to you again. McGeary, Michael O'Neill, lads, are going to love nothing more than getting back in front of him, maybe taking a knockdown. Two or three Tyrone lads are pushing Aidan O'Shea, you know, and now Aidan O'Shea is rattled and Mayo are a bit rattled. Like, I think Mayo's number one game plan this year is playing Aidan O'Shea in there. They want to play him in there. They play him and Ryan O'Donoghue in there. Is that the smart thing to do on Saturday, or is the smart thing to do to say, let's take Aidan O'Shea where he's best at midfield? Now, we have to rip up what we've been trying to do all year, but we're going to put him where he's best, where he can really hurt Tyrone, where Tyrone are not that strong, but rip up what we've been doing all year.
Yeah, I think, well, maybe he's not just as good at the likes of Ryan Loftus, you guys, at maybe driving with the ball and maybe getting in behind in that quick pass or releasing the guy or getting into a position to score. If you take it back to the semi-final, well, he should have 3 points, right? And you would have said he had a good game, he wouldn't have come off and he wouldn't be part of it. I think we probably overdo his in terms of, because of we set all the hype around him. I think the Mayo players now have seen, they come back from the dead with O'Shea not on the pitch. And I think that's probably done them good and done O'Shea good as well. Because, well, you're not like playing a poor game, and particularly getting into a final then. A lot of people's had a cut at you. So you're getting in here now, and he's already coming with a lot of bull. So if Tyrone want to mix it with him, I think he's going to be ready for that, because he's going to be hurting a bit from being subbed. So if he gets the start, well, it's not like he would have come into that semi-final.
Where will this... he's definitely getting the start. I see some people talking about this. He's definitely getting the start. Where do you think he's going to start, though, Brendan?
I just think the jersey, well, he probably treasured a bit much already starting, but he knows that he can come off. And that mightn't have been something that was in his mind going into the semi. So he's probably got the bit between the teeth. I think, well, you need to use him in and use him out, because depending on the flow of the game, I think Tyrone would be happy for him sitting in one position, either or. If he's out in midfield, along with Loftus and Ryan, and they have the better of them, Tyrone are going to avoid midfield. They're going to avoid trying to play the ball in height if they can. Obviously, we've seen them going long the last day. But I think they're going to try and avoid the muscle that they have around there. And if he plays inside, you're right, and as Aaron said, they'll have to double-team him. But that surely means that there maybe is a wee space for a Donoghue or Conway or somebody to be coming in the round for that type of flick down the same way at the other end. So I think it's almost a bit like the Michael Murphy scenario with Donegal. If you put him in one place too often, depending on the flow of the game, it doesn't suit. And you're on about the Mayor Vanya and how to use O'Shea. I think that's a vital part of the game. It's at the right time he has to go in to cause the trouble. And then his physicality is going to be needed out the pitch. And and the flow of the game, how that matches up, that sometimes can just be luck, Willie, but it is a huge aspect of it.
Yeah, the Tyrone will be well set up for him inside. Everyone will know where they have to be whenever Mayo have the ball. His strengths, for me, his best position, I'd be playing him around the half-forward line, because he's a ball winner. Very, very unselfish in terms of getting tackles in and all that there. But if he's in the inside lane, he's not a shooter, so he doesn't have that threat. He's always going to pass it off. Anywhere from the 21 in is far more clogged than it is from midfield to the half forward lane. So what he does really well in that position whenever they're in possession is he attracts two or three people because he's so big, you can't go to him in a one-on-one situation. So he attracts two or three people and he has got good hands at that stage where then he can slip the ball off to someone who's coming at pace that's broke into a bit of space because a few of the extra defenders have all come to him. The same thing doesn't happen in the full back lane because obviously there's more bodies around there and a turnover against him is magnified way more and definitely will be against Tyrone. So I understand, you know, you've seen a lot of games and he has played inside. I do think at times he will be there, but I'd see him more drifting out towards the half forward lane to try and get on ball, try and see if he can create pockets of space for other players coming at pace to get in and get shots off, because like I said, that's not his strength. His strength is winning the ball and bringing others into the game, and I think to leave him in there, to leave him isolated, to allow turnovers against him, that drains in his confidence. But it's a massive psychological lift to Tyrone.
And just on that, Aaron, as well, is that if you play him centre half forward, there's no one obvious really to mark him unless you bring McNamee out centre back, and that's messing it. You know, you have Michael O'Neill, you'll have Peter Hart, you'll have McGeary. You know, these kind of, or Myler, Burns might be the obvious one.
But he wants to be the actual one to sit in. Yeah, he doesn't want to be the one who's in direct combat. He wants to be the next man in to tackle O'Shea. Yeah. So great. So if O'Shea gets the ball and he's taking on a one-on-one with whoever it might be, whether it's Michael O'Neill or whatever, and Frank Burns then gets sucked into that tackle and O'Shea gets a slipped off, the plus one's gone. Yeah. Then, you know, that's Mayo dictating play to Tyrone and not the other way around. Yeah. There's a fine balance in it, but...
But it's a position he's perfectly comfortable in. It makes perfect sense then to play him at 11.
It's his best position, as far as I'm concerned. It's like, for years I would have thought, put him in full forward, lump it in, have men coming off him, have him maybe chipping over his few scores. We've seen now, that's not his natural position. It's not his best position. So what can you get the most out of him? And one other thing, like, you're completely right, Brendan, what you're saying in terms of the ball is absolutely going to be up in him, but... He's the captain. He has the opportunity. If he is the game, if he fulfills his potential this weekend, he has the ability to lead Mayo to being the All Ireland champions. Like,
yeah,
he's been in more than enough finals that side shows or distractions not going to be there. All he has to do is perform to the best of his ability. He doesn't need to worry about anything else this weekend other than performing to the best of his ability. If he does that, Mayo will be hard to stop.
Another thing Tyrone needs to be...
See if he goes to 11, sorry, well, should McNamee then just follow him and just do your marking job to stuff him out? Because, you know, we're talking about the importance of him. I mean, Hamsey's well able to hold that full-back area. You know, McKernan maybe sits in then and becomes a more regular cornerback that, rather than roving. Because then you allow Burns, as you said there, to sweep and to fill his gap. So then you haven't really... conceded anything to Mayo. You still have a man marker going out, taking out one of their leaders in the game.
Yeah, I think definitely McNamee man marking him on the edge of the square is easier than man marking him at centre half back, because Aidan O'Shea can take kickouts, he can get himself into the game, you know, an awful lot easier around that middle third, win his own ball where he's not being doubled up on. I do think that would be potentially...
Well, in general, with Michael Murphy over the years, whoever was detailed to him went everywhere. I'm thinking of Justin McMahon and those, like, they just
Tyrone
followed
tried
him.
Loads of lads to do that job.
But they followed him everywhere. So is it something that they do? Like, he's that big that as strong as Ronan McNamee is, Aidan will still win his own ball. It's, can he hold him off to draw a second man in to release their strong runners? That's when he's at his best. That's whenever he helps the flow of Mayo's game.
Yeah, exactly. Who do you see an advantage on the bench, Brendan? Like, I mean, Tyrone have an excellent bench, and if you're right in what you're saying and McShane doesn't start, like, Tyrone have one of the best benches in the country, with Canavan, Bradley and McShane for the forwards. You have Tiernan McCann as your first one for the backs, and you've no Ben McDonald come in at midfield. Like, they've it all covered.
You would assume Rory Brennan should be back. Richie Donnelly could be back.
Yeah, yeah.
So to have those options.
If they're back, right, yeah, Rory Brennan, that'd be the two for the backs, and Richie Donnelly potentially midfield or wherever. They have an excellent option. I don't think Mayo have a good bench. Now, I'd love to see Hessian start, and I take your point that they needed something off the bench as well, but you're looking at James Carr, you know, you're looking at Jordan Flynn, you know, you're looking at young...
Doesn't start.
Who?
Yeah. if McHale doesn't start.
If McHale doesn't start, you might have him, which is something. Yeah. But there's nowhere near the same danger of the Mayo bench as there is of the Tyrone's.
Tyrone's bench is absolutely frightening. I mean, you just wonder if it goes to extra time. You have to think that they have a massive advantage just on that sheer ability. I mean, Darragh Canavan, I mean, there's been people talking about could Darragh Canavan start. I just think the craziness of Mayo and everything you spoke about, Willie, previous around the first half and that, I would never see the point. Put him in, you look at the wee way he can open up the game and that, and the amount of ability when the game opens up. There's a lot of things pointing towards a throne there, should the game go into that extra time. But the conditioning of Mayo, well, you'd have to say the energy levels, and as well on Tyrone, you know, particularly with everyone was hanging over him the last day. I'm not too sure who's doing the S&C, but I know Peter Donnelly's in with Tyrone there. You'd have to say phenomenal stuff. I mean, the two teams, the freshness and the fitness that they brought, you would see in the extra time in the second half in particular. You'd have to say they're two of the best prepared physically teams we've ever seen as well. But certainly, well, we all know about the bench. And like I said, even in the players like Mark Bradley and these guys, I mean, God, if you've played 70-plus minutes or 60-plus minutes or if it goes into extra time, you have somebody as nippy as Alexa Hammond-Canavan coming on, throwing a shape and going by you. So those things would be leading definitely in Tyrone's favour for the whole game.
Darren Cohen is one that I didn't mention there. I think he, in a broken, disorganised game where he can get on the ball, he's extremely accurate, Aaron.
Yeah, the one thing he's got is good feet. You know, so get him the ball anywhere inside 40 metres and he can put the ball over the bar. A game opens up and there's maybe not the same pressure or intensity. That's ideally suited for him coming in at that stage. But in terms of if you're saying the quality in both benches, to me it's stacked in favour of Tyrone. And I think particularly what matters most really is your scoring power and the ability that they will have coming off the bench. You could be looking at 1-4, 1-5 that you could easily see them being able to chip on. And I don't see the same scoring power coming off the Mayo bench. So if it is a close contest, and like Brendan says, it gets to the stage where, you know, things are opening up a wee bit more, Tyrone have that bit of class and that bit of quality that, you know, they have rootless finishers that they can call on. But I suppose we said for years that Mayo don't have the forwards and Mayo don't have the scoring potential, but this has gone on 10 or 12 years now and they're still coming back and back and back. It's their game isn't about someone who's scoring 1-5 or 1-6 all the time. Granted, Killian O'Connor would kick whatever he would kick in terms of freezing from play, but it's their running game, their running power, and their ability to stay in games, to come back from games where they look like they're completely gone from. I think that's what's maybe their most admirable trait this past 10 or 12 years and what's made everyone really sit back and enjoy them.
Yeah, the spread of scores. Come here, do you are down on McShane starting or not starting?
No, I don't think they'll start him. I think it's too big of a risk for someone who hasn't played a full game of football in over 2 years, coming up in nearly 2 years at this stage. For him to have to go off in 45-50 minutes, I think psychologically that there could be a huge blow to Tyrone, where I think coming on. Now, it wouldn't surprise me if they throw a curveball in terms of is it Mark Bradley up front or Darragh Canavan or something like that there, which then will release whether it's McKenna or Donnelly out to the middle of the field. I think that could potentially happen, but I don't think McShane will be the one who'll start in the inside lane. I think he's too big of a player for them. I think he could start Bradley, Canavan or something like that and withdraw them to put McShane on, where I think if you're turning the tables doing it the opposite way, I think psychologically it could be a downer on Tyrone.
Okay, that's a fair point, because are we all agreed that somebody that Kilpatrick is going to follow Ruan, it's not an enviable job he has for the day, because Ruan never stops running, but Kennedy might not start because, you know, of his lack of, you know, mobility against Mayo, and either McKenna or Donnelly will probably be in midfield, and you might see a Canavan or a Bradley starting, Brendan. Would you go along with that?
Yeah. And literally outside of, there's probably, going to be 16 players in around that midfield zone. Where anybody plays in terms of position, I suppose, doesn't really matter that much, but how they match up to each other is the key. And you're right, the physicality of Donnelly and McKenna as well is huge. And you're on about, O'Shea, how you're getting the best of those two players and their physical input into the game. I think just McKenna's ability to be all over the pitch. Probably Mark Sim is the one that's going to drift out that bit more. I just like the look of Donnelly and McCurry a lot this season. They've done really well inside and they complement each other. So I think that all those things, well, probably as we're talking about it now, means that Mayo would probably want to finish this game in normal time, because I think because of that means an added time. And even on it, but somebody might tire up, you know, McCann to come in. His ability not just to be a great defender, but to come up with bits and score. He's scoring every game he comes on. He's such a threat as well. So they're all the things that Tyrone have. So thinking about it now, I think if Mayo's going to win this game, they'd want to win it inside a lot of time.
Yeah, no, I don't think there is extra time this weekend. I think that if it's a draw after normal time, it's just a replay, which the GAA would absolutely love. So, like, I mean, there's no, this is one game they're not going to, because they need another payday, and I'm sure there would be extra time. in the next one. We'll get on to kickouts, Aaron. Like, I mean, you know, we saw what Kerry did. Like, I mean, Mayo will have learned a lot from Kerry's mistakes, won't they? Like, I mean, the amount they conceded on turnovers, they'll have noticed how their full back line was well able for the Tyrone kicking game, out in front of them, marking them from, you know, beside and punching the ball away. The aggression, which was a big plus for Kerry. The short kickouts with Kerry never going long. Like, Mayo aren't going to repeat that. Like, I mean, Henley has a good variety to his kickouts, and surely in that middle third, From a kick-out point of view, when you've Aidan O'Shea, Ruan, Dermot O'Connor, Loftus, there's an advantage there for Mayo, because other than Kilpatrick, Tyrone don't have great fetchers.
They don't, and I suppose a few aspects from Kerry is, like we spoke about it before, they went short, and the cornerbacks or the fullback, any of the fullbacks, just ended up literally carrying or Gavin White right to the opposite side of the field, where they weren't taking any Tyrone players out of the game. Yeah. They were going on a one-off run where it's not like Tyrone of old, where everyone's dropping as far back as the inside the far 65. They still were engaging around the middle of the field, but because there was only one carry man going and all the rest of the Tyrone players were doing man-marking jobs, White was making headway, but he was nearly condensing the field on them all then, because he hadn't taken out a Tyrone player, and then every carry player was still marked. You know, so it was of no advantage to them whatsoever, where in an ideal world, you need to go hard at somebody to draw a Tyrone, the player, to have a loop around you, and then you're punching another hole further on up the field, and you've taken maybe one, two players out of it. That's what they have to do. If they're going to go short, they have the hunger, they have the dogs around the field to go long and win a ball cleanly, if they can win it cleanly. If not, they'll have the people on foot, you know, to win the breaks. But I get what people are saying, you know, if Kerry had kept going long, Tyrone had more players there, you know, they could have won break balls. But if you win the ball cleanly, you can take a mark now. You have a free kick.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want you to stop and slow it down and let them get back again, but they can't touch you, you know, so you have a free kick to get the ball moved on as quickly as you can to another player, and then you're in the far 45, you know, and you haven't had to do any running. Do you know, you haven't expended any energy whatsoever. So not to do that at all at any stage.
Like, can you say, if they keep doing it, we're not saying keep doing it, because then it becomes obvious, but you have three targets, right, left or up the middle, for a long kick out. Yeah. And Jesus, for vary it some little bit to keep them guessing.
But again, Tyrone dictated the whole game and Kerry played to their tune. They were allowed to do this, so they just did it. They didn't vary it at any stage. Whereas if you go long with a few and they win them, do you know, then you say, then the Tyrone have to start pushing up. You know, you have to make them think. You just can't keep doing what they want you to do, you know, because it's madness then. So Mayo have the fetchers. They definitely have the hunger if it comes to it's not a cleanly won ball and it breaks on the ground. And they have the men to carry it. And what they have is they have better players and more powerful runners who will go in more numbers than what Kerry did. So if Tyrone want to sit back, like, it's all right, you might, if you're going to take Keegan on in a 1-on-1 situation, but as he's offloading the ball to Oisin Mullen, who's coming even faster off your shoulder again, they're very hard to stop, you know. And then Ruan's coming after him, or Owen McLaughlin's coming after him.
Yeah.
They have serious pace. And then what they also have is they have the scoring ability. Mullen will score, Durkin will score, Keegan will score, Ruan will score. You didn't have that same threat with Kerry. Well, you had good footballers in maybe loose situations. These boys don't mind contact. They don't mind taking you on one. Like, they'll lay you up and they'll take you on, which, Kerry probably didn't do. They didn't ask enough questions of them. They turned it over too cheaply.
They're stronger too, and they're more physical, and like I mean, all those things. So like Mayo have definitely an advantage on the long kickouts. So Morgan is probably going to have to go short a little bit more, because there'll be a good few Mayo targets out there. One thing Mayo are very, very good at is when a team goes short. They have an excellent press. Now, Aidan O'Shea is a big part of that. You know, like, I mean, we're talking about playing him out at 11. He orchestrates the press, and if he gets a hand on you, you're probably going to spill it. You know, like, I mean, to have it, putting Aidan O'Shea at 11, I suppose you're losing that, Brendan. You know, but if Tyrone are going to, you know, be scared of going long after what happened with Kerry, like, Mayo are going to have to identify, right, where are they going to go here?
Yeah, well, this could be the winning and losing of the game. And there's a massive psychological element to this. It's almost like the teams you see now trying to play out to the back in soccer. Another team presses them, and it just messes up the whole flow of everything, because you're not able to do that. And we've stopped you, and you've ended up kicking the ball over the line, and the crowd will roar. You just mentioned the crowd. So for Tyrone now to get a kick-out strategy and play, really, and change what they did in the semi-final, is a massive thing. There's going to be huge work on it. And we all know now, I only caught the end of kind of kick-out strategies. The time and the effort it takes to get one in place where everybody's tuned in, it's almost like it could take up half the bloody training session getting a kick-out strategy right. So this thing of Tyrone changing now is a psychological thing that the team are going to try and enforce on Mayo. And Aaron touched on it there about the semi-final. Even though it was Tyrone who did the tactics, he did give Kerry the ball. Kerry didn't maybe use it enough, and it suited Tyrone, which is fair enough. But I don't know if they just maybe enforced it on them, because when they went long, then obviously it was a 50-50. So Mayo don't mind it either way. They want it long. If you want to go short, as you said, boy, they'll push up on them.
Yeah.
So that in itself, really, is a huge psychological imbalance in their favour. And I think, you know, about the first half and the kamikaze side of things, no matter what way Tyrone are going to do it, Mayo are going to really, long or short, really go after their kick-out. And the psychological impact of that, the players will try and play it down, the body language will try and stay right, but that's a massive, massive advantage that Mayo will do in trying to strangle Tyrone. And as we know with Mayo, if they get the run on them, they score a point, next ball, squeeze them up again, turn them over, get the crowd on them, keep squeezing them in. So how Tyrone deal with that's very, very difficult, because if they come up with a plan and a tactic and try and hit the wings, if that gets stopped a couple of times, what does Morgan do then? You know, have they got a backup plan? Do they just go long? Mayo eat it up? So that's a big aspect of the game. It could be the one and losing of it.
I have, we'll have to get to predictions now, lads. So to kind of summarise everything we have been talking about here, just because this is such a difficult prediction, kickouts advantage Mayo, right? Because the advantage on the long ones, and they have a very, very good press. Tyrone don't have a great press. Intensity both teams are going to bring to middle third. I'm calling that all square,
yep.
Right? Pace running out of defence. I think Mayo have the advantage there, like the advantage on every team in the country, pretty much. Full forward lines, we think Tyrone have an advantage there. Bench, we think Tyrone have an advantage there. Management experience, we think Mayo have an advantage there. The running game, probably breaking even. The kicking game, probably breaking even. Support Mayo. Mentality, we didn't really talk. We've talked about Tyrone before. They're the mentality monsters. Mayo have this baggage of losing finals. I understand this team don't, but don't give me, you know, the doubts potentially that could be there. We're giving that to Tyrone. Free takers, we haven't talked about free takers. Now, there's an advantage to Tyrone for sure when McShane is on the field, because the McCurry and McShane. The problem with Tyrone, they've no right footed free taker. And the problem with Mayo, Aaron, is that they've no left footed free taker. Isn't it, guys?
It is, and it's surprising to have gotten to the stage where we're at here, and you don't have your nail down, going to kick 80-90% of free kicks, and you have the same hanging over both teams. But we're going through all of that there, and again, I suppose this is what's fascinating about it, is that there's just so much that is swaying both ways, and they are so evenly matched. I think it's going to come down to that one of the two teams is going to have to go slightly off skew from what they've done all year. Yes, they're evenly matched, but What I mean is,
what surprise are they going to bring?
Yeah, is it Aidan O'Shea doesn't play as a focal point in full forward, and he plays in the half forward lane because that's where he's better on the ball? Is it Donnelly coming to middle of the field, someone different in the inside lane instead of him? The matchups, like, is Myler going to go in midfield on Rouen, similar to what he did in Fenton a couple of years ago? There's going to have to be a tweak that's slightly different from the norm, from what we've seen as being pretty regular all year for both teams, that it could be the difference between winning and losing here.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm giving free takers to Tyrone when McShane's on the field, because they'll have it balanced out then. So it's 5-5, Brendan. And there's four all and three draws out of the 11 categories. So, like, I mean, it's not an easy prediction. You can start first.
Work away, Brendan.
I mean, people are going to ask me during the week, I'm thinking, right, there's nobody with any assurity can call this game, you know. And just on that Mayo press and the kick out and how that happens, the only thing about Tyrone, they love being in the battle. I think they'll enjoy that close contact side of things as well, and being in and around the house. And if Mayo are trying to put it to them, how they break out. And of course, if they break out and get a score up the pitch as Mayo's trying to squeeze them, there's a psychological side to that, and I suppose that's what they'll be playing up on. So this one, first of all, I'm so used to bloody extra time all the time. Thanks for telling me it's going to be a replay. I'm getting all excited about fucking extra time. But listen, well, the points we've made there, as I said, coming on the closing stretch, if Tyrone are ahead by a couple of points and they've unleashed that bench, I think they'll manage the game out. Goals, obviously, as we know, both teams are desperate not to concede any goals. Tyrone scoring three in the semi was massive for them. You know, it's game over, you know. If they outgoal Mayo, you know, certainly if they get two on them, it's their game. So I think Mayo protect my defence. That's why probably Keegan will stay in the round there. I just think if the opposite end, if Mayo are in that bit of a lead and their tails is up and they've got Tyrone on the rack, they could go ahead and win this game and push on and win it by 3 or 4 points, should it be. So either it's Tyrone by a point or Mayo by a similar, or they push on. I've had slight wee feeling for a Mayo, but every day it changes. If you ask me the word, it'd probably be Tyrone, really, but for now I'm going to go for Mayo.
Mayo won. Aaron.
Yeah, I'm going to say the same, and I can't tell you why. I nearly have a feeling in my gut. Whenever
Andy Moran has that gut feeling too, but yeah. I'm sure he had that gut feeling all
he
the
has
other
them
years.
For everyone. I haven't had them for all the Mayo ones. No, there's just something.
You just have a feeling this year about Mayo, lads. Yeah, there's just something about them.
Like I said, it's the first time that I've had it, but I don't.
It's your first.
Yeah.
I've had those feelings in 16, 17, and I was burned with them. I wasn't far away, but I definitely had the feeling in, I think it was 16, I fancied them to be.
Like, you're so foolish to write off a Tyrone team in what's going to be an out-and-out battle. But I don't know. There's just something in me that thinks this is Mayo's year. No logic, no nothing. The feeling you got, that's what I'm going to run with. it's as complex as that.
The feeling in your gut is the pure madness of Mayo with all the retirements, all the All-Ireland final playing players who are legends in Mayo.
Killian O'Connor.
Massive All-Stars. Losing Killian O'Connor. Aidan O'Shea's captain. How many people would it sicken to see Aidan O'Shea lift Sam Maguire, you know, and get rid of all that? Aidan O'Shea be the one to break the curse, and you know, because he's much maligned outside of Mayo and completely unfairly. All those things are making me think that madness is going to be Mayo's year. And then I look at Tyrone and look who they've beaten. And look at how they, like, these lads are just, you know, they're on a different level when it comes to an All-Ireland final. Like, I mean, it's very hard to break Tyrone. They have a great full forward line, I think they could get goals. And, like, I mean, after all the madness of the Tyrone year, wouldn't you say, like, no other county other than Tyrone could have won that bloody All-Ireland, beating Monaghan, Donegal, Kerry, Mayo, after having a COVID scare. And you'd be like,
Cavan, Rain and Ulster champions.
And you say, there's 2008 all over again, where it's nearly the hardest All-Ireland that's ever been won. And on Monday, we'd be going, Jesus Christ, Tyrone. Like, I mean, how can you beat that, you know, that crowd? I don't know.
If you wanted to look in depth enough, beat Kerry in 0-3 in an All-Ireland semi-final, new management only ended, a fresh bounce off them. Are you looking at the same thing again here?
So there's a good, for me, I have a good feeling on both. So the good feeling isn't working for me. I don't know what's working for me.
Just sit back and enjoy it. That's what we do.
So my gut doesn't work. My analysis, I can't come down and it's a draw. Yeah. I'm going for a draw. And we'll be back here next Thursday. I'm supposed to be going to Spain next Tuesday. That's out the window again. And we'll be back next Thursday and we'll have something to go on then, maybe, to be able to give it. I'm really sorry to everyone. I can't decide. It's a draw and it's a replay. That's what I'm going
for. If I had known there's a draw, Brandon, I would have went with a draw.
Don't often sit in the feds. Right, that's it. So we've two Mayos and a draw. Well, maybe you'd have gone for a draw if you had the
no,
option.
No, I'll stick with Mayo. Yeah.
So I don't know. Listen, stick to what your gut tells you. If your gut tells you both teams, just go for the draw. I think that's what we'll put it down to. Right, listen, that's all we've time for. We'll be back on Monday and maybe we'll have new All-Ireland champions, or else I'll be right and you won't be able to listen to me. So we'll talk to you all then.
On the fence.
Good luck.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "I Caffrey, you Free State bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.